This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Non Sequitur. Your facts are uncoordinated. Non Sequitur. Your facts are uncoordinated.
I am highly offended by what I just read in the chat. Is Kyle running things today? I'm getting a little echo too, by the way. Anybody else?
Yeah, I think it's like Kevin's in. Nope, it's clear.
Whew. Okay, so no, everyone, I am not running things tonight, and screw you for that insinuation. So we're already starting tonight off on the wrong foot. I hope you're happy with yourselves, chat. I hope you're happy. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Kyle. Well, I think the intro was brilliant. I got to say that I actually really liked it. I love the closeted atheist. I can't even pronounce it because whatever it is. But that was brilliant. That was good.
Closetous. Atheist. And mine was mine was a fabulousus nomus.
No, fabulous discount in it. No, I saw discount this time.
I know, Steve, but I wasn't going to draw attention to it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't want to make you depressed. Now, see, first we make him angry, now we make him depressed. Why does he do this show? I don't know.
Kyle's a little bit nippy today.
I thought I had two shirts on
to take care of that. No, okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Non Sequitur. It's good to have you all, especially those of you who assumed that I was screwing up from second one. You know how much I absolutely love you. Tonight, we're going to be talking about demonology, and we have Kevin Mears with us, who is he's been a demonologist and in the paranormal
investigatory. There we go.
There we go.
Cool.
Investigative. There we go.
We both could say that word.
Field for about 20 years. He was trained by Lou Gentili. I say that right?
Yep.
Boom. Lou Gentili. He co-hosted Lou Gentili's show for 10 years. He's been the host of his own show called Paranormal Encyclopedia for about 3 years, which you can find here on YouTube and iHeartRadio. Fair enough. Did I get all that correct? All that information?
You nailed it.
Excellent. Good. Just a couple of announcements real quick. Tomorrow, we will be, as you can see on your screen right now, tomorrow at 8 p.m., we have two incels that are going to be joining us on the heels of last week's Incel Insights episode with Shannon Q and the Catfish Man, which, by the way, interestingly enough, this weekend I received an email from YouTube saying that they had received a privacy complaint, and I guess Catfish Man didn't like that we had went through his history and flagged it, so we had to go in and blur some things out. I don't know why that is, Steve, with his information being on the internet. We didn't dox him. It's out there for the general, you know, public to find.
It's the only thing he could do. It's the only power he could regain. And so for him, it's a more of a power thing, I guess, because he felt like he was probably attacked or something. The information's already out there. And yeah, I mean, if the information's out there and you repeat it, I get why some people would be like, you know, I don't want my information repeated. I understand that, but, you know, this guy is just doing it out of spite. That's it. Everybody knows who he is. It's not like we're doxing him in any way.
It's interesting because I was reading. You can read sort of the posts that they do on the forum. You can't really get in there, but you can read like the preliminary posts. And there were yesterday they were giving him all kind of hell for the the whole somebody had convinced him that he was talking to the FBI. And they convinced him to drink a glass of his own urine on video and send it to them, and the FBI would back off, and he fell for it. So they were saying, you know, how could you do that live on camera? And he was like, well, it's 3 years ago. It doesn't mean anything. So, I mean, they're really giving him hell, which is just you know, justfully so, but still. Anyways, following that show, I was contacted by two incels. One has been on Jesse. Oh man, his name escapes me. What is it? Jesse, the Fallen State. Man, I can't think of his name. Chat, help me out here.
I know Jesse Klosky.
No, he's not Jesse. No, this is a right wing talking head. The chat will know. He's the host of the Fallen State. But anyway, this particular incel. Yeah,
real cool. I like him. You know, Jesse Lee Patterson.
Jesse Lee Peterson.
Yeah, yeah, that's him. Yeah, he's
so
really
this
cool.
This guy was on. He's what?
What?
Did you say he's really cool?
He is. The host of the show is really cool.
Oh, Steve.
I like listening to him.
No, Steve. Yeah. No, Steve.
The black guy with the bald head.
No. Yes,
I've listened to him a few times. He seems pretty decent.
No.
What am I missing with him?
Whoa!
Really,
no. Steve? I think you need to. Yes, he's worse than the incels.
Oh, I have to check out his because I've only watched one or two things from him, and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool.
He is. He has the IQ equivalent of a toaster. I could literally pull a toaster into this call, and you would get more information from the toaster than you would Jesse Lee Peterson. Swear to you.
I have to watch some of his other stuff then, because the few videos I saw, I was like, oh, this ain't too bad.
That's like saying Tucker Carlson's is compelling, Steve. It just doesn't fit.
Well, yeah, he makes Tucker Carlson look like Jon Stewart. That's how bad that's the level of that you're dealing with.
I would rather watch Tucker Carlson.
I will rewatch some of his videos then, because I know who he is. But like I said, I've only watched one or two things, and it didn't seem to be that egregious. So,
yeah,
I would reevaluate.
At least toasters make toast.
At least they have a purpose.
Good call. We'll be joined by two incels who have a different view than Catfish Man put forth, and they claim that he does not represent them. So Shannon Q will be back with us, and we will have the part three actually in our incel series. I'm getting contacted almost daily by different incels, and on Twitter, if you go to Twitter, my God, that's a dumpster fire from hell. I mean, that's hell's dumpster fire right now. Yeah, there's a thread on there that's they're just going in deep and hard. So surrounded by inceldom. As you'll see on the right hand side, we are if for those of you who are able, and you know how much we appreciate that, you can go and you want to help us out. We're there's a suite in Adobe that we use to do when we do videos, the graphic work. We're trying to get the Creative Cloud suite. For those of you who are able to, right there it is on your screen right now. For those of you who are able to help us out with that, you go to paypal.me/ nonsec, NONSEQ. It will keep a record of your email address and just make sure your name's on there. And for everybody that donates towards that, we will be doing two private shows for you guys, just for you guys. There won't be anybody else a part of that. And you'll get a private hangout with Steve, me, and Dave, as well as the new in-card credits. Your names will be a part of that as sponsors for the show to show how much we appreciate that, just if you're able. And we do appreciate all of you guys' support. Okay. I think that's all that I have, Steve. Anything else for you before we...
No, I'm ready to dive into this. This is going to be a fascinating topic because people may know back in the day in my high school youth, I was really fascinated by the occult. I used to write witchcraft on all my peaches and, you know, with Theban language and runic, and I had the Great Key of Solomon and the Necronomicon and all that kind of shit. So this might be something that I might actually have some interest and knowledge in, at least a little bit. So it's gonna be fun.
Excellent. All right. Well, Kevin, I'm going to turn it over to you to let you, you know, introduce yourself to everybody and kind of give a more detailed introduction to yourself. And then we'll go from there.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. Thank you again to Kyle and Steve for having me. I'm very flattered to have been invited. So I've been doing this demonology thing for about 20 years now. I was trained, like Kyle said, by the late Lou Gentili, who's very pretty well known in the field, both in the paranormal and in demonology in particular. For people who are wondering what the heck demonology is, it's very similar to the paranormal investigator thing you see on TV, although, oh, there's so much I could say about that. But the difference is, I'm always with the eye of, okay, if there's something going on, if this person's having experience, what can we do to help them? Because people who call someone, like, generally people who hear footsteps in the hallway at night, they're people who are in a hotel room because they're too terrified to go home. And it's a common, I mean, there's plenty of things we can get in with that. With a lot of people are, of course, none of this exists, you can't prove it. And I'll be fair, I mean, let's face it, if I could prove that demons exist, I wouldn't be here, I'd be accepting my Nobel Prize. But the reality is people do have this experience of something they can't explain, and I can tell you from very tragic firsthand experience that telling people it's in their heads is not the answer to that question. And yes, for the person who just asked in the chat, yes, I am a ghost demon hunter.
But you differentiate between the two as two distinctly different things.
Generally speaking. I divide it into four categories, at least in my head. Nobody else does this that I know of. But you have, to me, you have ghost hunters, which are people, are usually like kids and stuff, they're going for an experience, they want to see a ghost. You've got paranormal investigators, which are trying to prove the existence of the paranormal. You have parapsychologists, which are also trying to prove the paranormal, but they have a degree in psychology or physics or something like that. And then you have demonologists, which are people like me. I'm not so concerned about proving it exists. I'm concerned about verifying, to a priest's satisfaction, there's something else in a house. And once there is, how do we fix this?
Let's break this up into three different segments. We'll start out with your history, how you sort of got involved with doing this, what made you kind of push to want to do this as a career. Then we'll go into your what you would put forth as your proof for the existence of something paranormal, and then we'll kind of go into where do we go from here? But before we jump in even to your history, can you kind of give everybody a brief synopsis of what a demonologist is, like what that word entails?
Well, if you look up in a dictionary the word demonologist, the definition you'll usually get is the study of demons. I found that a fool, because now you want to look up, well, what's a demon, and different cultures have different ideas about what that means. I've always explained it the way that my mentor put it, which is, it's the study of evil. You know, my main focus is on spirits and ghosts and demons and things of that nature, but I also have read about serial killers and about cult leaders and a lot of other things. It's a pretty broad topic. Mainly, it's kind of the fix-it guy of the paranormal, I guess is the best way to put it. Our main purpose is, okay, if there's something legitimately, okay, if there's something in the house, if somebody's having an experience, and it's something they find violent, they need a priest. But a priest isn't going to get involved just because you say, or at least a good priest is involved just because somebody says there's a spirit in their house. They want some kind of evidence. So my job is to present photographs, eyewitness testimony, and other types of things that a priest is going to listen to get them to come in and do a house blessing or an exorcism if that's necessary. But most of the time, we don't even need an exorcism.
So let's jump into your. We'll come back to that after you tell us, walk us through kind of how you started into this particular field of study, or what event kind of catapulted you into that direction. But did something happen that you had an experience, or you know, something like that, to where you decided that this was going to be the career path for you?
Most people that are in this field, you know, my mentor, his mentor, most people I've known, they get into it because they had an experience and they wanted to understand what happened to them. I saw the movie Ghostbusters. I thought it was the coolest thing I've ever seen and decided that's what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. It's not exactly a career path. That's something I think that's worth pointing out. I'm not quite sure what to call it, but I don't make money doing this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely groups like my group and most other groups that any other group I personally will work with or consider credible refuses to take money for what we do. The only exception we have to that is, okay, so if you live 6 hours away from me, I'm going to ask you for gas money. Because I work I work 7 to 3 in the morning. You know, I work a regular job. I can't afford to drive all over the United States to help people as much as I might like to.
So Ghostbusters was the inspiration, but let me just ask outright, have you had a paranormal experience or an experience with, let's say, demons that kind of, I guess, centered your focus on this particular branch of the paranormal studies or investigations?
I had an experience when I was in college with a friend of mine who was having a violent haunting. I had very little to do with it, but it was enough of, okay, what the heck was this, and how do I do something about it? It's a very personal type of situation, so it's not necessarily something I talk about a whole lot. And also, I mean, I've had some fairly dramatic cases. It's one of the least interesting I've done, because I was just on the periphery.
Can you give us an example of a case that you've done? Like, what's your most, the one that you would say proved to you beyond a shadow of a doubt there was something else out there? Like, give us an example of a case that you've done and the steps that you took as part of being a demonologist. Like, what happened and then what did you do about it?
Yeah, there's a case, whenever I do interviews like this is the one I usually bring up. Some people have heard me in the chat on other shows, so they've probably heard the story before. But back in the late 90s, I get a call from Lou. Am I available to go on the drop of a hat to Western Pennsylvania to this guy's house? Now, they're telling me about how, or telling Lou and eventually me when we get up there about how things are winding him on the bed. Not that he could see, but he could feel the bed moving. He's like handing him and pulling his hair. He feels them rubbing up against him, hands underneath his skin, rubbing against the inside, fingers getting pushed down to down into his ears. It's a pretty weird set of experiences. So we get up and we start talking to this guy. And the guy is, that's the thing, people have this idea that people with these that have these experiences tend to be sound nuts. Some of them do. A lot of them are pretty down to earth. I mean, he was a blue-collar worker. He did construction. Pretty nice guy. But the thing that he hadn't told us until we actually got up there is that everything that he had described to us originally had started to happen to his wife. He wasn't experiencing, his wife was. And he didn't believe her. She went to a priest, didn't believe her. She went. He took her to a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist didn't believe her. And for months, this woman is trying to find somebody who can help her, somebody who will listen to her. And finally, one night, while heavily medicated, she gets up in the middle of the night, goes to the cabinet that they have, unlocks it, takes a gun out, drives to the grocery store where she works, puts the barrel in her mouth, and pulls the trigger. The next night, after he finds out what the worst thing he can imagine has happened, of course, everything that she describes starts happening to him. That's the point. Finally, looks and finds us. Now,
okay.
There's more. Well, if you wanted a direct experience, yeah, but go ahead.
Yeah. I just want to stop right there so that we don't have to come back. You know, we don't have to come back and cover ground.
Yeah,
we can kind of go at a pace. Did the wife have any sort of medical history in relation to mental illness? Was she treated for anything prior to doing this? Did she have depression? Any sort of thing like that?
Did she have
a history?
She did have depression. She was being treated for depression, which is true.
And what about the husband? Was he clear or was he?
No. No past history, no medications. And that's all part of, I mean, the intake, when we start talking to somebody, the first question, the first questions we're asking, are you diagnosed with any mental illnesses? Are you on any medications? And I've certainly had people contact me and say, I think, I'll give you a good example of that. I had a woman contact me who thought her daughter was possessed by a demon because her daughter was angry. Her daughter was physically violent, and she was particularly very angry about anything related to God. But I'm talking to this woman, and she explains to me her daughter suffers from a condition called PMDD. So I didn't know what it was at the time. I contacted people I know who were actual licensed therapists and said, okay, what is this? Could this explain what's going on? And it turns out it's a hormonal condition that causes violent mood swings. So I emailed the lady back, and I go, look, in good conscience, I can't tell you that this is demonic. My recommendation is go talk to your child's doctors, say the medications aren't working, and see what happens. I don't hear from her for 6 months, and then 6 months later I get told, she's on new medications, she's much better, and that's the end of it. And there are a lot of times where it's like, no, people are genuinely mentally ill, and the best solution for them is take the medication. Certainly, I am not I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't have a degree. I don't give medical advice. I don't tell people, I could fix your depression. You need medication for that. It is a limit psyche, and it's not something within my control.
So the husband starts to complain about experiencing the same things that his wife did prior to her passing. What are the chances that he's in such a state of shock that he's kind of taking those on, knowing that's what she went through? You know, it's a very shocking situation for him. He doesn't know how to process things. What to you cross the line between something that he's in shock and experiencing, an undue amount of stress, at the situation into it's something from another world or something evil that is causing this.
We set up an infrared video camera in his bedroom, had him lay down, and I wished to high heavens I had access to this footage. I'm talking to Lou's wife to see if I can get a hold of some of this stuff. But we just have him lay down and watch him from another room and see what happens. He tells us that he can feel that they're there, and we watch as the bed between this guy's legs starts to move as, like, the shape of small footprints of something walking towards him from the edge of the bed. But we can't see anything. There's nothing on the camera. And certainly, absolutely, I would agree that up until that point, everything that he's describing has a psychological explanation. But the last I checked, sleep paralysis and hypnagogic hallucinations don't appear on video camera like that.
So what do you say to somebody that, like, for example, myself, who is hearing this for the first time, what do you say to somebody that says, why don't you have access to that footage that you can share?
My mentor, Lou Gentile, is the one who originally had the footage. He was the one who ran the group, so he kept all of that stuff. He passed away in 2009. His family is not involved in investigation at all. So when he passed away, everything went into storage.
You saw the footage, though?
Yes, I was there when it happened. It wasn't just, didn't even just show me later. I was there watching it live.
So what was your plan of action once you witnessed that? What was the next step? What did you guys do to remedy this?
Well, we went in the room to continue to observe, to figure out what was going on. We had more experiences. Ultimately, we did a house blessing. He wasn't possessed. It was basically the violent version of a haunted house. And in the vast majority of cases, including this one, we did a house blessing, and that's the end of the situation. He's no longer having these experiences. And we do follow up with these people to make sure and see what's going on.
Well, and what's a house blessing? Like, what ultimately is blessing the house, and from what?
What we do is we'll usually, actually it's very much tied to the person that we're dealing with. For example, if we're dealing with a Catholic, we'll use the Catholic ritual of house blessing that many people probably listening have experienced at some point, where priests will go through your house, they'll do the sign of the cross with holy water, they'll say certain prayers to God. If we're dealing with a Buddhist, for example, we'd go to a Buddhist monk. If we're dealing with a Muslim, we'd go to a Muslim cleric. We rely on the divine, but myself and most demonologists I know are pretty flexible about how we define that. And it's always our goal to work with the person's own beliefs, not imposing our own.
Here's where my first big question is going to come in. If you're adhering to the particular deity or belief that the individual believes in, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can't all be true, right? All of the deities can't be correct. So what is actually driving out this force that you, I assume that you believe that these evil forces are 100% real. What actually is driving those out if each time you're praying to a different deity?
I'm not certain that all these forces or these deities are not real in some sense. There's a concept in Christianity, in Judaism, and to some extent in Christianity, that's been largely forgotten by modern Christians called the Divine Council. And they talk about it in the Psalms that Yahweh or Elohim sits on a council of gods, and he is the chief of it, and he judges the rest of them. But there is an interpretation of that that suggests the different gods of other cultures and other religions are other parts of this council. They're not the supreme god, but they answer to him. Or to put it in more traditional Christian terms, they're angels or archangels.
So what do you do if you have an atheist client?
It doesn't come up a whole lot. There's a saying among investigators that there's no atheists in a haunted house. Because once you start really experiencing things, it's hard to stay a hard atheist. Most people start to move towards at least agnosticism.
I would contend that you don't find many atheist clients because they're not predisposed to that belief that there's something else out there, and so they don't have these sort of paranormal experiences because they're not already predisposed to believing in something like a God, because that takes a step to believe that there's something else out there. And if you're already believing that there's a God, it lends that you would believe, or you'd be more apt to believe, in a ghost. Atheist, I think there's a good correlation with the fact that he doesn't have many atheist clients for that very reason.
See, I agree, but I disagree. And let me tell you why. I agree with the gist of that. But when people that have predisposed mental illnesses of some kind experience what they think they could be legitimate reality, something that they think that actually happened to them, and 9 times out of 10, it probably was something that happened to them. I've suffered sleep paralysis. I've had hypnagogic hallucinations. I've had auditory hallucinations in sleep paralysis states. Those are legit. And if somebody doesn't know how to cope with those, somebody doesn't know how to deal with them and say, you know, these are not externalized, these are internalized, I believe, right? Then even a hardcore atheist, as you said, might take pause and go, maybe there is something more to this. So even though they don't have a predisposition to believe in God, when you experience these things and you don't have the coping skills to understand them, I can see how even an atheist might go, maybe I might be changing my positions on this. Does that make sense?
But he's saying he doesn't have that many. He doesn't have that many atheist clients.
Well,
I've had
it's
agnostics,
rarer,
but a lot of the hard atheists. Part of it, I think, is there's a concept in demonology called grounds. For because one of the other common questions I get is, well, why don't they just possess the president of the United States and launch all out nuclear war, or something like that? And there's a much more complicated answer, but the short answer is this idea of grounds, that people that have a demon in their lives usually did something to bring a demon into their lives. The most common way for this to happen.
Have you met Trump? Have you met Trump? He doesn't qualify for that.
No.
Like, seriously.
I have to wonder. I am not a Trump fan at all. Which is its own issue. But you know, the most common way for people to get something in their lives is by practicing Satanism, by trying to summon demons. And I'd also argue that atheists are not likely to do that kind of thing.
Well, do you know any atheists, though, that have
that?
These experiences that you think that used to be atheists? I think that's the more prevalent question.
I don't know. The most common answer I get when I ask these people what their religious beliefs are is they were Christian, but they're kind of lapsed.
Okay, so yeah. Basically cultural Christians, in a sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Or the other one I'll get is they believe in God, they're not sure what, they just, the agnostic in the sense of not, right. I don't know, but I believe there's something.
Uh-huh. To me, that makes sense, though. There's a strong correlation between those, you know, that anecdote that you have of not dealing with many, let's try to put a figure to it. How many cases would you say that you've worked on? Just ballpark it.
Somewhere probably around 200.
And out of that 200, how many would you say that you've dealt with an atheist, a confessing atheist?
Or just someone who doesn't believe in the supernatural, a materialist, a physicalist, a ontological naturalist, someone who says, you know what, supernatural is all bullshit.
I want to stick to the atheist because I don't want there to be any type of God to lean back to, or the question of a God. I want to deal with the people that have flat out said there. You know, I don't believe that there is a God. There's nobody to come here and bless this house, that sort of thing.
I honestly can't think of a single example.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah,
No, I think there's definitely a strong correlation. Absolutely. But again, there have been people that I've dealt with that were people that didn't really believe in the supernatural that experienced certain things. And then they go, well, maybe there is something to the supernatural, but they don't make the leap and the connection to a God, because that's my disconnect as well. This is where I say, wait a minute, let's look at the facts, experience certain things, don't have a full natural explanation for it. But how do I get to that, to the supernatural, right? That's God of the gaps type argument. And how do I get to a deity that's involved in this, right? There's no possible way. Like, for example, you have the Roman Catholics come in, or the exorcist, your priest, and I assume that they mean Catholic priest, yeah. Right? Okay, so they have not a as often as you would think. Okay, but yeah. some kind of clergy, for some reason, yeah. they it's assumed that they have some kind of divine power in order to influence these entities or spirits or whatever you want to call them. And where do they possibly get that power from? Is, again, there has to be some kind of relationship where you say, you know what, these people have this kind of power given to them by this particular deity. And that's just a faith-based claim. There's no way in a causal chain of relationships you can get from I've experienced this to this is a power that a deity has given this exorcist to make it all go away. That's the disconnect I have. Can you see that?
Yeah, I get that. And the reality is there is that gap of it's been my experience that these rituals work. But there are other ways of explaining that other than bringing in a deity, even assuming that something legitimately paranormal is going on.
So why does the clergy?
I mean, it could be the willpower of the person.
Why can't I just go up to somebody that's demonically possessed and say, "Yo, demon, get the fuck out, dude. You ain't welcome." I mean, why wouldn't that work?
To my knowledge, it never has. It always requires some invocation of a deity. Yeah, I've heard of people trying it. I've never done it myself.
Invocations require some kind of.
Looking at what you've said so far to up until this point, though, if you look at what you've said up until this point, though, it's safe to say that in your experience, the people that you have dealt with that have claimed to have some sort of paranormal experience have been people of a religious or belief background, right? Okay, so if that's the case, why are demons not going to people who don't have any kind of faith? Like, why are they choosing only believers to haunt or, you know, cause any sort of turmoil to? Why are they being selective? It seems like you would have a more broad sample of people across the spectrum. It wouldn't matter, you know, if they believed in God, if they didn't, if they were atheist, if they were Buddhist, if they were Hindu, if they were Muslim, you would have a wide range of people. Why is it that they're not focusing on people who, except for those who have a faith of some kind?
It's a good question. In all honesty, I don't entirely know. One explanation the exorcist that I did work with put forward at one point was that faith is generally speaking a way of protecting yourself against these kinds of spirits. It's why we believe to use work. But disbelief is also a form of protection. That I don't want to call it that, but for lack of a better way of putting it, that faith that in the that there's only the material itself shuts things out.
So by having faith, they're inviting
possible supernatural causation, right? If you're a materialist or yeah. physicalist, you are thereby saying there is only natural causes. So anything that's relating to any kind of supernatural causation, whether it be demons, ghosts, fairies, leprechauns, whatever, you basically have said no to all of them completely. You've said they are not the cause for these things. They don't exist. That is how a materialist would approach that. So you're just saying because people that start off with these metaphysical positions that the only thing that exists is natural, everything that exists is material, then they don't ever even start to think that they might be something else other than change their position. Because I've seen seen people that because they didn't know how to handle what was going on. They've changed their mind going, maybe there is something more to this. And I don't particularly follow that per se, but I can see how people can do that.
I think there's also an issue of, like Steve's saying, hardcore material, you know, heavier atheists and materialists aren't going to make the jump to the paranormal necessarily. I mean, I remember being told a story once upon a time by an atheist I met about how he was out on the street one night and saw somebody walking on the street with their head in their hands. Like, the classic, you know, woman with the head cut off, carrying the head in their hands. But he still insisted he didn't believe in ghosts.
Do you think that's possible? For someone to carry their head in their hands down the street?
There's probably a magic trick or two that'll pull it off.
Well, there is a magic trick that'll do that.
Do you think that he was literally seeing someone carrying a head down the street?
There are magic tricks out there that allow you to carry your head, and that's probably what he saw.
So my point is, he didn't freak out and go and call a priest or something because he knew what he was seeing was not possible.
Or at least he rejected that what he was seeing could be possible.
Right.
Because it was late at night, and
would that be possible? In your experience, would something like that be possible outside of the explanation of it being just a magic trick?
That a living person could be carrying their head around on their head hands? Probably
anything.
Not. That that ghosts could do it? Sure.
Well, that's the question I have is when you start dealing with things like ghosts, you can posit just about anything, right? You can say a ghost is capable of doing anything. A demon can do anything because there is no boundary conditions. There is no thing that exists in any kind of physical reality that they are constrained to. They are not constrained to biological limitations. They're not constrained to physical limitations. They can walk through walls. You can make up anything you want for a ghost. And I'm not saying that you do. I'm just saying that we don't discover any of these properties of these entities a posteriori. They're always given to us by other people, right? They're a priori knowledge given us to people that we don't find empirically. It's just, hey, you know what? There's this entity, and it happens to have these properties that we attach to it. Leprechauns happen to like pot of gold. They happen to live underneath the rainbow. These are properties and descriptive things of these things that are given to us by individuals as humans' minds. So how do we go about saying, okay, if a ghost exists, and whether it be a disembodied spirit, a spirit that never lived, or a demonic entity, which would be a separate thing, category, but let's, for the sake of argument, put them all together. How do I say, this is what ghosts can and cannot do, and objectively validate that these are the things that would be properties given to that entity?
It's a good question. I mean, pretty much the only thing we can go on is pretty past experience. What I've experienced, what other people I've spoken with have experienced, there does seem to be some limitation to it. Although most of the limitations are in their ability to manipulate the physical world. In terms of what they look like, they seem like they can look like just about anything they want.
Well, for example, I'm not dogging you, right? But I'm gonna read this because I told this to you earlier, so this is not, I'm not sandbagging him or sharpshooting. But somebody had wrote
said,
"Please go hard." Please, in Twitter, they said, "Please go hard on the charlatan tonight." He claims to be an expertly trained paranormal investigator that specializes in demonic hauntings and possessions. Basically, an expert in scamming vulnerable people out of their money. Eskom society. Now, I'm gonna defend you a little bit here, Kevin. I don't think that you're a scammer. I honestly don't. I don't think I honestly think you believe this wholeheartedly, and I'm not even putting a value on it, it's true or not. To me, a scammer is somebody who goes about doing things that they do not believe for financial fiduciary gain. That's not you, I don't think. Okay, so I think that's an unfair assessment to make that about you. Now, when it comes to the ontology, though, again, for example, if I go demon hunting, right? If I go ghost hunting, one of the things that they generally say that a ghost can affect electromagnetic radiation. Right, so they have an EMP meter of some sorts. Right, trying to make it into a scientific endeavor. The problem I have with that is you have to have the assumption that for some reason ghosts will do that, and that is a huge disconnect for me. There's nothing to say that a ghost has any empowerment, if they existed, to affect electromagnetic radiation. It's just a wild assertion that somebody has made one time, and it's kind of just stuck in the narrative, right? But there's no real way to determine that. You can't even determine that the method is good to determine if they exist. Does that make sense?
No, I think you have a perfectly fair point. I had a very interesting experience with an EMF detector at one point, which did raise some questions for me, because I was doing a house in Delaware. It wasn't asked to come down directly by the client. I was asked by another group to come in and advise, because they weren't used to dealing with violent hauntings. But we're standing in the house being set up. The family's actually planning on leaving the house so that we can just investigate by ourselves. And just before they leave, one of the investigators is standing in the doorway with an EMF detector, and the thing starts going off like crazy. And everybody's getting really excited. The family's freaking out, because it's like, they've heard the same things everybody else has. What's happening? You know, is the devil about to appear in my living room type of thing? So the priest that was with us, who was actually an Orthodox priest, he wasn't a Catholic priest, just walks over to the spot and says a silent prayer, and the EMF detector goes silent immediately. And one, it didn't go off again in that place the rest of the night. Two, one of the other guys we had with the group was an electrician. So we went down to the basement later, and he checked through, and he couldn't find a source for the radiation. It's hardly proof that EMF works, but I thought it was a really interesting experience of one little prayer, and all of a sudden the machine stops. And it didn't break, because it continued to work through the rest of the house.
You see why people take that as anecdotal evidence, right?
I know. I'm well aware.
Yeah.
Which is the problem.
Kevin, how often do you get contacted, or do you work on a case?
Usually 3 to 4 times a year. It's not super common. There's usually 3 to 4 I'll do a year, and there's probably another 1 or 2 that I'll just talk to people, and like I said, just suggest that they go back to their psychiatrist and get their medications up.
Is there a particular region of the country that you work in? Like, does the North have more cases? The South have more cases? Geographically, are you kind of centered around one area more than the rest?
I mostly work in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, New York, and mostly because I live in New Jersey. And again, there's travel issues with going further out. I do get emails from people from – I just got an email from a woman in California. She's a priestess, Egyptian priestess, trying to help somebody in California, and she's living in Texas. So I just referred her to a group that works in California, because it's like I can't fly all the way out there.
Right. What are
it certainly happens all over the country. I just don't. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sure. What are the circumstances that the majority of these cases come out of? Like, is this somebody dealing with the loss of somebody close to them recently? Is it a house issue where they moved into a new house and they're experiencing things? Like, is there a sort of an underlying theme that runs through each case, or are they all completely different?
They tend to be very different. When someone has what I would consider a ghost, it's usually somebody close to them just passed away. They move into a new house. They do renovations on the house. Demonic is usually, like I said, somebody gets involved in black magic. Somebody gets involved in because somebody brought it up in the chat, I'll clarify, theistic Satanism, as opposed to the Church of Satan. Somebody gets involved in one of these things, and they draw the attention of something. Someone becomes cursed. Things of that nature. Usually it's something in their life changed in such a way that drew the attention of a spirit.
Now, and that's kind of what I get hung up on. It's something dramatic happens in someone's life, and then these sort of odd occurrences happen. Like, for example, you brought up the dark magic, black magic. Let's say Ouija board. Like, I would say those people are actively seeking out for there to be something there. You know what I'm saying? Like they're getting mixed
you're
up
absolutely
in dark magic. So their brain's already open to that possibility. Now, with people who have, you know, a loved one recently die, that's a dramatic change in their everyday life. So it would, to me, make sense that these sort of things could very well happen because they're actively seeking for, you know, whether it be some sort of sign that they're still there or, you know, that they crossed over to where, you know, they were going to go, something like that. But does it ever happen to an individual that has no life change like that, where everything is, you know, life's good, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, these sort of things start to happen?
Not often. There's usually some kind of triggering catalyst for either type of phenomenon. People that are usually pretty happy and centered in their lives don't have this kind of experience.
Okay, so let's go back and sort of recap what we've sort of established thus far.
Mm-hmm.
And objectively, I want you to tell me which makes the most sense to you looking at it this way. You have a group of people who are, for the most part, in your experience, religious-based, religious-minded. They have some sort of belief in the afterlife and that there's something else out there in a dimension that is not like our own, right? Mm-hmm. These people have dramatic changes that occur in their life, or they are actively seeking out something like dark magic, looking for something else out there in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
In your experience, it hasn't happened with people who don't have a view of the afterlife, who don't think that there's anything outside of the realm in which, you know, they exist, in your experience.
Yeah.
Does it make more sense to think that there is something evil out there that could be possessing these people or their houses, and it responds to whatever deity that particular person it's haunting believes in? So if you have a demon, let's say I come in and I believe I'm a Buddhist, right? It's going to respond to a Buddhist priest. Is that likely to happen, or is it the fact that they're just they have the mindset to believe that there's something else out there, and something traumatic happens, and the combination of those two things create an environment in which they think they're being haunted, but really that's not the case. It's just that they're coping with a situation that is shocking and disruptive to their life.
From an objective perspective, both explanations fit reasonably well, and Occam's razor would certainly suggest that the material explanation is likely of the two. My central concern, I'll be completely honest, you'll have paranormal investigators who are very focused on proving this stuff exists. I'm a little more pragmatic about it in, okay, somebody's having this experience that is making a bad situation worse. What can we do to help them resolve that situation? I believe this stuff exists. If I was wrong, and all I'm doing is the religious equivalent of a magic feather, I'm actually okay with that.
So more of a placebo effect, then.
If that's what's going, I don't believe that's what's going on. But if that's what's going on, I'm okay with it.
Wouldn't it help them not to feed that sort of line of thinking, though?
I mean, you're exacerbating a little bit, obviously, right? You're feeding into their narrative, right? You're playing into their imagination or whatever the narrative that they have. And these people, I believe, are not making stuff up, right? I want to make that very clear and go on record. Most people that talk about these stories do not make up the stories. Things that do happen in them, they may recall them incorrectly. There might be holes in their memory. So by me, poor recollection, but things happen.
Yeah.
And when you have things that happen to you, that happen to other people as well, it is it is questionable what the reasoning is, right? I'll give you a perfect example. You're talking about Ouija boards, right? I used to use a Ouija board frequently. One of the first times I ever used it, I'm using it and I get a phone call. And it was from a friend of mine who never called me. It was a girl that I knew from high school. She never called me, right? She happened to call me this day, right? And she's like, "Hey, Steve, can I ask you a really good question?" I'm like, "Yeah." And I kind of had a little crush on her. So I was like, "Yeah, go for it," right? She asked me the strangest question I ever heard. Her question was this. She goes like, "Steve, I'm looking at my brother's bedroom and he has I know he keeps a Ouija board underneath his bed and I just got this really bad urge to go use it." She goes, "Is it okay to use your Ouija board by yourself?" I was using the Ouija board at the time to ask her, you know, because I was like, what's going on with this girl? Because I was interested. I want to see if the Ouija board was working. Now that was coincidental as shit, right? I mean, I cannot explain that event. True story. And but the other thing would be, one of the things that you, when you use a Ouija board, it would go like a figure eight to me, and I use it by myself, and it would just occasionally go hog wild and go in this really rapid horizontal figure eight, right? Frequently. Come to find out that it happens to other people. Now, it might be completely the ideomotor effect. There might be something in the brain that processes it. Well, that would be a natural curvature to do with the hands. I get that. But it is interesting to find out that other people have had that exact same experience. Not, you know, not going up and down, not going right and left, not going circles so much, but just this weird lemon type like figure, right? So I don't put it to, oh, well, there's a supernatural causation to this. But having similar shared experiences, if I had all those people that had those experiences get together, they might think, okay, this is supernatural, and then draw their own conclusions for it. But I think the problem is when people have these conclusions, they have the conclusions by just erroneous inference. I don't think they're justified to have the inference they have, because it could be just as well, you know, a natural phenomenon. It could be the mind. It could also be aliens. It could be, you know, fifth dimensional creatures. Yeah, who knows, right? But they always seem to come to a deification of some kind, right? It could be coincidence, but weird stuff does happen. And that's why when I relate these stories, people can believe them or don't believe it. I don't give a shit, but I know they happen.
Yep.
I mean, I'm still Facebook friends happen, with
but
the girl that I used to use.
It all has an explanation. Everything has an explanation.
We assume that they have. I don't necessarily follow the PSR, but yeah, we assume there's an explanation for things. Now, we can go on the assumption that we start naturally. That's always a naturalistic explanation, and by which we can exclude all non-natural causation, right? But I don't. I mean, do you fall into that category?
Give me an example of something that doesn't have or that wouldn't have an immediate explanation.
Well, like I said, the same things that happen, like people on DMT experience these similar entities, right? I'm using the word entity, not as a biological reality. But they all experience the same type of very similar patterns, right?
Our brains are similar.
Why would they all look like a joke? And that is a viable explanation, right? There's various different ways to look at the ontology here. But you're just picking one. You're just picking one of the four possible horns on the ontology of these things. You're saying, this is the one I'm going with. They're saying, we're going to go with an external account. Okay, but either one is just as viable in some ways.
No, I don't agree there. I don't think that they are equally viable because I don't think
there's no way you have any evidence that supports one that supports the other hypothesis equally. You can't externalize or internalize position.
I don't think you can go to the supernatural because I don't think that that's something that is something that's real.
Well, yeah, but you're a ontological naturalist though.
Right, because everything that I have dealt with personally has a reasonable and a demonstrable explanation. Like, coincidence is something that is weird, yes. It's very weird that you had somebody call and ask about a Ouija board while you're playing with a Ouija board. But that's here's my question.
Oh,
this will be my question.
It happens. You do something enough, good things are going to happen. Right, I get that.
I believe you, but what would be the other explanation?
Let's discussion.
Sure, absolutely. Just hold on one second.
Coincidence complete coincidence would have been the thing. Now, fortunately, here's what sucks. I actually tracked her down, and I wanted to talk to her about this topic. I found out she passed away 2 years prior from when I finally found her in a car accident, which really sucked. But I do, to this day, have a friend of mine who we were playing with the board, and she got this glazed look. Her eyes were dilated. She was like sweating. She felt uncomfortable. It was just a weird sensation she had. The term that the people that we had asked about it called it obsession, not possession. If you, Kevin, you might.
Yeah, that's talk about more common of the
two. Yeah. Now again, I talked to her. I did talk to her about this, and she says to this day, she swears she felt something. You know, she's very much still in belief that something had happened to her. She's not a theist. I guess she's a little bit religious, but not like culturally, I guess. But she still to this day does not deny something happened to her. I do not deny something happened, but it was probably something completely coincidental, right? Something that was probably natural, probably. But some people that would in those situations have these experiences go, you know what? Yes, it's coincidental, but I'm going to link these things together. And I can't make that linkage any longer.
Sure. But Kevin, I'm going to let you make your point too. But my response to that would be that, yes, they feel that there was something else there. But feelings, reality doesn't give a shit about feelings. You know what I mean? They can feel all they want to that something else happened. But the reality of the situation is it's most likely not the case. Kevin?
Yeah, but those are probabilistic arguments, right?
I got a couple points to make here. First, let me point out that, well, you're right, in objective reality doesn't care about beliefs or feelings in particular. On the other hand, personal reality is all about your own feelings, your own experience. There is the situation of something I've been trying to come back to over the course of the discussion. The experiences are real for the people who are having it, and telling them that it isn't real is not, in my experience, a productive solution to the problem. These people have been told that it isn't real.
Right, but you can't just coddle them. Like, you can't just, because it might make them feel bad, try to create a false reality centered around this actually being something, rather than just dealing with what it actually could be and, you know, maybe pushing them towards speaking to somebody who is a medical professional or somebody that can suss these things out. Professionally.
And for the record, again, I don't give people medical advice. I do tell people, go talk to doctors, psychiatrists, people with legitimate qualifications. The one priest that I worked with until he passed away last year was actually a therapist. Not in the sense of this Christian counseling. He went to school. He had a formal degree. He was licensed in the state of Pennsylvania. He kept up with his education, and he was able to address those things far better than I can. But again, it's this: people are having this experience. You have people that are in emotional crisis, and sometimes they need a shorter term. They do need counsel. You know, I wouldn't even say that people that I think are having legitimate experience shouldn't consider counseling. I think they should, just because it's adding more stress to, in us. Assuming it's real, to play devil's advocate, as it were, for a second, assuming it's real, it's adding more stress to their life, and that's something they should probably talk to somebody who's qualified about.
See, I don't know. I think it might exacerbate the situation a little bit. For example, if I went in there and I let's say I was a paranormal investigator, right? And I went in there and I said, okay, I got all your data. Now I'm going to take a survey of everything. I'm going to look around. I'm going to give you my evaluation after a couple of days, and I have all these test results. And I show them. I go, well, you know what? We weren't able to find anything. It looks like your house is completely clear. You might want to look into different reasoning for why these things are happening to you. At that point, it might set them the minds of ease. You're not lying to them, right? Because you didn't find anything. No. I think that when you do give their beliefs validity, there can be some dangerous things that occur and things that can happen, like that instance of a person committing suicide. If a person does have mental problems, then somehow telling them that there's some kind of demonic activity is not helping them. Matter of fact, as you know, we talked about earlier, our friend Janet Q did a beautiful video series, part one and part two, on these A&B Christian counseling, where they are telling people, hey, if your kids are unruly, they're demonically possessed. And then you pay a couple $1,000 and they come in and they can do all this horse shit and exercise them, right?
Yeah,
I am so against that, you don't even know. And I want you to expand upon that as well. But can you see that if adults believe it, they're going to involve their kids at some point. And then the kids, and then it's just a chain of causation of generational beliefs in these things. And you never get out of that rut. You never get out of the point where we say, look it. If you have a headache, it's not caused by a demon. You have PTSD, you're not caused by demonic activity. You have PMDD, as you mentioned, that's not caused by demonic activity.
Yeah.
It's got to stop somewhere. Do you at least kind of see that point? And what is your thing on the children?
I would agree, which is also why I know Shannon disagrees with a lot of what I said, but I'm completely with her that the Christian counseling is something that needs to be stopped. If you want to be, I'll be direct. If you want to be a Christian counselor, in my opinion, go get a legitimate license from the government and get legitimate education from an accredited university. Don't do this foolishness. And if your kids are being unruly, they're probably being kids. You know,
what is your religion?
If there's somebody's oppression, I'm a non-denominational Christian.
Okay.
Right. You know, and a lot of times that's what I tell people. It's like, no, if your kids are being unruly, they're kids. You know, if you suffer from chronic depression, you need to go get on antidepressants. You don't need to talk to somebody like me. The points when I'm looking at getting, you know, for me to get involved, one of the first things. I need to clarify is it's like, okay, what is your history of mental illness? And if somebody's got a history of depression or schizophrenia or something like that, it becomes very much a proceed with extreme caution and contact somebody who's more qualified in the field to get advice and come with me. Beyond that, there's also this reality of, again, people... Psychiatry is very real and very important. People need to be on those medications and should be, which is why I actively tell people, you know, stay on your meds. I do not give medical advice. But on the other hand, the next question I have is, okay, what are you experiencing? And if somebody's telling me, you know, some of those common questions I'll get is, well, I get a bad feeling in part of my house. And the answer we'll give them is, have you considered not going to that part of your house? You know, it's when they're saying, okay, you know, a dinner plate just flew across the room and shattered into the wall. Or something like that, assuming it's happening, doesn't have dinner plates don't fly across the wall without some force acting on them. As a rule.
But do you see that most of those instances of those events happening, every single time they're either made up or they're fake photography. Like I watch those things on YouTube. I've seen just about every all those footages out there, right? Everything out there. Not one do I go, that looks legit.
Have you ever seen it?
You come to find out that a lot of them.
Yeah, I have seen objects move on their own accord.
So give an example.
I have. Sitting in a college dorm room with a friend of mine watching a Bible fly about 3 feet across the room.
And okay, what, you know what? What I have
happened,
had
what happened all related after then, though.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What was the circumstance around that? What were you guys doing, and at what particular time did the Bible fly across the room? Like, what were you guys doing?
Well, she was having a problem with her ex at the time, who was heavily involved in the theistic form of Satanism. And we were talking about that, which is when it decided to move on its own accord. And there was no rumble. There was no truck going down the street. There wasn't an earthquake that we could feel. It just moved. Nothing else in the room moved.
How far did it move? Did it fly? I think you said it flew across the room earlier. Did it just shift, or
it
did
went
it
about two or three feet? It went across.
And no one was around it.
It was sitting. Nope, no one was around it. It had been sitting there for probably at least the last hour without moving, so it wasn't like in a precarious position. It just like somebody just walked over and shoved it.
Did it open to a specific verse or
no? It stayed. It just landed close.
Okay, so
it was
let me ask
on
you
a
this.
TV if- and it fell on the floor.
Okay, so what was the takeaway from that?
Yeah, well, hang on. If you had to come up with a natural explanation, what would be your first thing that you would posit if it wasn't a demonologist, wasn't a ghost, wasn't anything like that? if you just out of your mind, you had to say, okay, what is a possible naturalistic explanation? Would you be able to come up with one?
I can think of three.
Okay.
The least likely would be that it was deliberate deception, stage magic trick.
I would agree with you.
Which I think is probably the least possible, but least likely. The experiences like that happen. People do try and screw with us, but that's not the most common in my experience. It could be that a truck going past on the on the road causes the building to vibrate, moves it. The third possibility would be like a small earthquake.
Do they know you were a demonologist at the time? Were you involved in this sort of thing at the time?
I was getting interested at the time. I hadn't gone through the training I have now. I was a kid. I was a young adult at this point because I was in my early 20s who was interested in it and trying to learn more.
So maybe it was this is me throwing something out there. Maybe it was just in a position that it slid out from whatever position it was in, and because you are just now at this stage of your life getting interested in this, you're seeking out these instances where something like this would happen.
A possibility, right?
It's a possibility. Although again, it wasn't in a particularly precarious position. It had been sitting there for some time.
Okay, what leads you to be?
The movie was very abrupt.
Okay, but there has to be some kind of causation, right? I mean, for an event in that type of macro level. So how do you get from it moving to it had to be a ghost? How do you know a ghost can even move things? How did you determine that was even possible? And then after you're done, I'll relate my one instance where I can think of was something, it didn't move, but I'll tell you in a second. But how would you go about saying, well, you know, ghosts can move these things? How do you know that? They can.
Yeah, that's the reality is that it is an assumption. It's based on, admittedly on anecdotal evidence from other people who've worked in the paranormal, from folklore, from at this point, at this point, 20 years down the line, and almost probably 21, 22 years after this happened, my own experience, because that was the first time. There have been other instances.
Okay.
But they seem to be able to do this.
The one instance that I do recall, I was in Utah and I was living with a girl for about 5 years, and we used to play off and on with the board too. And one night nothing happened until about 3 o'clock in the morning. We were sleeping, and all of a sudden there was a lava lamp that was on the dresser, and the whole room just kind of filled with this purple light. It had just turned on inexplicably. Never happened before. Never happened afterwards. Again, probably a bad rocker switch. It's one of those dial. It wasn't even a rocker switch. It's one of those dial switches that you click it, and as you rotate it, it turns on and turns off. But it was plugged in and everything. But it was just weird that the one night for somebody in this lava lamp, because when you play with a board, you ask for signs. Who can we talk to and stuff like that. But that one night, that lava lamp just happened to come on out of nowhere. Weird, right? But it coincidental, right? There was several of the nights where it didn't turn on, right? But if you're seeking patterns, if you're seeking things going, there's a relationship here. Like if that lamp were to came on any other night, it would have just been, it's a bad switch, right? So that's my takeaway was, it was probably a bad switch.
True. And again, it's like I said at the beginning, if I could objectively prove any of this existed, I'd be collecting a Nobel Prize. I wouldn't be. There is a reality of it is coming down to personal experience and anecdotal evidence.
Do you think that if demons existed, they just don't want to be detected in that way objectively?
I'm inclined to think, I think they benefit more from the general lack of widespread belief.
Do you think people can conjure them at in summoning rituals? Like you said, the
people certainly try it,
right?
Or devil worshippers, as people in the chat have pointed out. If you want to use an older,
but I mean, there are
technically accurate, I think, term.
There's conjuration spells, right? I mean, I had a Greater Key of Solomon. They tell you how to invoke Pazuzu and other deities. Never tried any of them, but I mean, certain people.
Is
have tried these things? Do you think it's possible that they have? Because I mean, we have somebody in our live chat that at one time was willing to do this experiment to actually summon demons.
I'll do it.
You know, be interested in that live. But we were trying to do some kind of a way to get him the right materials for like a little fundraiser. But you know, like I'd be down for that. Like if Kyle wanted to do like a actual ritual and. Like a friend of ours wants us to summon Odin, right? He wants me to summon Odin.
I would totally be a part of that.
I don't believe in Odin, but I'd be like, okay, what the hell, I guess.
How do we find a, how, that's a good idea, actually. We can probably, let's do that, actually. Yeah. Let's look into that. How, is it increasing? Here's my question. Is it increasing? Are you seeing a trend of more people complaining that they're being either, you know, possessed, haunted, cursed, or is the trend starting to die down more today than it was, you know, let's say 10, 15 years ago?
I'd say it's actually almost certainly that, yes, it's increasing.
It is.
Yes.
Okay. Really? Because I would think of the opposite, because the big push was back in the days of, obviously, the Amityville Horror, which you have, you know, knowledge of because of Lou.
Yeah.
Back in the day when all these things were coming around, like The Omen, The Exorcist, and movies that I liked. I thought The Exorcist was the scariest movie ever made, or at least one of them. But if people were
it's
in that
a great
mindset,
movie. I love
back
it.
Today, oh, God, it's brilliant. And what do you know what demon it was? It wasn't Pazuzu. Satan that possessed her. It was Pazuzu. Very good. See, he's a demonologist. Yes. Okay. Very good. But you know back in the day, like the aliens, everybody saw UFOs because of all the UFO movies. Same thing. What?
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you know what Pazuzu's job was in Babylon?
He was the god of locusts and
kazoos.
What else did he do?
Disease,
oh,
actually.
Man.
But here's okay, the funny
moment. There's locusts that follow them, wasn't it?
Locusts, I believe, are part of it. But here's the funny one. He was also a protector of children.
So he wouldn't have.
Well, there's the a theme that runs. I'd go with the devil.
All right, go ahead. He's not a demon. That's a devil. Like,
there's Baal and what is it? Beelzebub and who else?
In D&D, devils and demons have their own.
Or two different things.
What's the one from Voodoo? Papa. What's his face?
Papa Legba is probably the one you're thinking of. He's not actually a bad sort.
Yes, Papa Legba.
He's the god of the crunky.
Go ahead.
He's the spirit. I shouldn't say the spirit, because in voodoo is an interesting religion in that you have a single god, monotheistic god, but he's a deistic god who doesn't get involved in anything. But under him is this pantheon of spirits they call the Loa that are more like guardian angels and saints that get involved in people's lives. Papa Legba is one of the more popular Loa.
Somebody wrote this. I got to read this. This is hilarious.
What are your things about voodoo?
This is funnier than shit. One sec. Smaller Than Life wrote, wasn't in Azuzu, the one that possesses cars. that's brilliant. Azuzu.
What's your sense of humor about voodoo? I find it really interesting. I'm a history buff and a religion buff. And the history of voodoo, how it's influenced world events, for example, the Haitian revolt, the slave revolt that happened in the 18th century, I want to say. A lot of the people involved with it were voodoo practitioners. The infamous dictator Papadoktu Bolye was a voodoo hongan, which is a term for their priests. I think it also gets a very unfair rap. There are people in voodoo that do terrible things, just like there are Christians that do absolutely terrible things. But the majority of voodoo practitioners are actually perfectly decent people.
So what about
voodoo's the only one between voodoo and that scare me? Yeah. I think voodoo is a different kind of animal.
Well, voodoo makes shit out of pufferfish. Yeah, so I mean they can zombify.
I know, but it's creepy.
Snap
little hair dolls. That's creepy.
Yeah, yeah, and they can shrink heads, which is a real thing.
Well, there's,
what about
there's
things
funny,
like Sangria?
Santeria? It's more or less, it's a slightly different region of Africa and Central and South America, voodoo. The there's a whole collection of religions, which is Santeria, Voodoo, Palomayombe, Macumba, and a whole bunch more I'm not remembering off the top of my head. They call Afro-Caribbean religions that are all products of the transatlantic slave trade.
Santeria, I don't practice it, and I ain't got no crystal ball.
But I don't take issue with these people, because the reality is, yes, a lot of them do actually do animal sacrifice, but they don't do human sacrifice. It's a common myth. And the funny thing is, you brought up the voodoo doll. There's two things about that. One is, voodoo dolls aren't actually technically part of voodoo. There's voodoo and there's
Scooby. Wait a minute.
Voodoo is... Yes, I'm about to break into song.
Voodoo dolls are implemented in voodoo. Is that what you're saying?
Voodoo dolls are a part of hoodoo, not voodoo. Voodoo is a religious practice.
Dolls are part of hoodoo.
Hoodoo is a collection of magical practices that combine some African magical traditions and European ones.
Okay, I
actually
get that.
Voodoo dolls, so when you're... as we think. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
No, we got a little. No, we got a lag here. I could do a prologue.
Yeah, voodoo dolls, as we think of them, are actually from European witchcraft. African magic does use dolls, but they use it for the opposite reason. You put the pins in the dolls with notes on them to tell the spirits how to heal, where to heal your body in your life. Okay, it was Europe that.
So one of the militias.
Yeah, the militias came out of Europe in the witch tradition.
Gotcha.
Touché, Ball Hubba. I do have a crystal ball that does visit me on Sundays. You're correct. So I don't practice.
No, she's without a crystal ball, too. No, she's without a crystal ball. She doesn't use
it. I think
one.
She found it. She found it.
Did she find
it? That was 2019.
I'm glad she found her ball. That's good.
The priest I used to work with had a crystal ball. There's actually two stories I had. I don't know. I tend to be very skeptical of trying to foretell the future, mostly because of how often people get it wrong.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. What's your stories?
I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just skeptical. I'm sorry. What did you say, Steve?
Oh, what are your two stories?
Okay. So the two pieces of food for thought I want people to consider. And this is something you guys may want to consider looking up in terms of this idea of paranormal investigation. And because a common complaint I've seen brought up is it doesn't produce any useful results. I mean, you look at most sciences, they give us something. But there's two instances that I know of, and probably more, where somebody looked into these types of claims and came out with something important. One is a guy by the name of Francis Aston. He was a physicist. He's actually the man who developed the mass spectrograph. Now, what a lot of people don't know, because at one time the story was well known, and you can still find it on if you do a little bit of searching online, but when he first was developing the mass spectrograph, there was a book that was published called Occult Chemistry. Occult Chemistry was published by Annie Besant, who was leader of a group called Theosophy. And the idea in this book was that they were using clairvoyance, they were using psychic powers to examine matter on the atomic level. And while they're doing this, they described what they called perineon. Perineon was atoms similar to neon, but different atomic weight and numbers, and they actually gave the information in the book about this. Now, Aston does a little bit of poking. He actually discovered one of the first isotopes of neon that very closely matched what the book described as this perineon. That research helped him develop the mass spectrograph. And to give you an idea of how, well, it got downplayed in later years, when he gave his Nobel acceptance speech, he explicitly named occult chemistry as an important influence on his work. The other story I wanted to really...
You know, that doesn't surprise me, you may think. People,
yeah.
I was going to say real quick, there have been numerous things discovered under spiritual circumstances, like even Francis Crick,
yeah.
The double helix. He was on LSD when he discovered that. People that the guy that came up with a polymerase chain reaction, he was on hallucinogenics when he discovered that process. So there are things that people might attribute to spiritualism or altered states or things like even the alchemy. Alchemy was the predecessor to chemistry. There are things that back then that maybe they did know that we don't know now or whatever. It's quite possible, but alchemy itself was just a precursor, right? It just was practically wrong. But they might have one or two things that would have led into a discovery such as that.
I have to say this every time that we go here, but the double helix was found by the Sumerians. They carved it in a stone tablet.
The two snakes having sex.
We have it. It's real.
10,500
BC. Anyway, proceed, Kevin.
Yeah, the other one I was going to point out, though Steve made some good examples as well, is the EEG, the machine they used to read brainwave patterns. The gentleman who developed that had an experience where he fell off of a horse and broke his arm. At the same time, his sister reported having a feeling that something bad had happened to him, and it was exploring that question of, well, why did she have this experience that ultimately led to his development. My point in raising these two stories is not necessarily, it doesn't prove that the paranormal exists by any stretch of the imagination. Coincidence is obviously a thing. But again, taking the time to investigate the question can produce useful results. Dismissing it doesn't actually result in anything productive, in my opinion. If you do, because you do have skeptics, and there are skeptics that actually actively go out and look into these things themselves. But you also have people that will sit back and just say, oh, that was just this and that was just that, based on what they read in a newspaper. And it's like, how do you know that's what's going on? Why, you're just making assumptions. Instead of, okay, go out and see what happens. You may not find proof of a ghost, but you may find something else.
I agree with you and I disagree, and here's the reason why. I agree with you that these things should not be just dismissed by fiat. I made the argument many times before that, look, people have things have happened to them. They have experiences, right? And like, for example, even like the God claim. For thousands of years, people have experienced something that they determined a God. Now, whether that means that ontologically as a being that is all-powerful, who the hell knows? But to dismiss it as something may not this by fiat, that something doesn't exist, I'm not quite there yet, right? I'm still under the... You know, we'll use it as a placeholder for now. You want to call it God, fine. And I'm not using a God of the gaps, but it is a sort of a placeholder of, look, there are experiences that people have. That's a fact. There might be something more to it that is beyond the natural. Who knows? I don't know one way or another, right? And the God of the gaps would be something along the lines of, we don't have a scientific explanation for it, ergo God. That's not what I'm doing here. And it might be, God just might be some, you know, packet, a small recessive packet of ignorance, as Neil deGrasse Tyson would say. That's quite possible too. But I think that things can be learned by investigating some of these things. We might find things that people wouldn't have ever discovered had there not been reasons for people to believe it and then go, oh, you know what? We found a natural explanation for this we didn't know before. So I think there are some reasons to investigate. However, where I differ from you on is that I think we should go in with a more of a scientific mindset, right? Thinking, these are not supernatural causations. Let's try to find a naturalistic cause for these things. As soon as you allow for any kind of non-natural and violations of methodological naturalism, you open up your scientific investigation to any type of possibilities. And that's not going to help do anybody any good, because you're talking about assumptions. You have, no offense, but you have assumptions galore. I mean, your whole paradigm is built upon very unsubstantiated assumptions, to the point where they're so arbitrary that they're meaningless for the most part. And I'm not, again, dogging on you, but to do a scientific investigation, I think that you really want to do, you got to start with the premises. We don't know shit about these things. You got to go in saying, I don't know what the hell a ghost is. I don't know what it can do. I don't know what it can't do. Let's look at what we do know, keep the facts of the matter, and then try your inferences from that. Because until you do, you're not going to, like you said, you're not going to objectively validate any of these things. That's why probably nobody ever has before. You know, either they don't exist or they're just not objectively verifiable by their will, or people don't have the correct methodology to approach it. It's going to be something along those lines.
there are groups that are trying to do that, which would be more parapsychologists in particular, because, again, they're the ones actually working within academia and paranormal investigators. Like I said, my bent is a little more practical in the, you know, when somebody's in crisis, pulling out a tape measure and going, okay, how far did the object fly, isn't resolving the, it's not resolving the situation, and which is more of my central concern.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, I don't know if supernatural, I don't even know what it means to have a supernatural causation, right? I don't know what it would entail. I usually let people describe to me what they mean by that. I'm not an ontological naturalist. I am a methodological naturalist. But I do have my own positions. Like, I don't think demons exist in what people would be like saying, Pazuzu, right? I don't think that being exists. I would actually go to say that I believe that it doesn't exist, right? I believe very strongly that children are not going to get possessed by demons. It just, it's nonsensical to me to posit that as an explanation. It is so remotely outside of our view of reality, right? And we have our own experiences that we deal with a lot. We've never had a reason to posit a demon as an explanation for a child, you know, having a disease, or a child acting out or being disruptive or abusive to their parents or talking back. And so when I see in any organization, yeah, you know, it's a make a child talk back to their parents demon. No, I believe that's all bullshit.
No, yeah, that's
so.
And to be clear, let's be clear. There are particularly there's exorcism and there's deliverance ministry. And deliverance ministry, well, straight up, I cast out the demon of talking back to your parents, and that is can be extremely destructive. The big difference in deliverance ministry and exorcism is a question of, okay, you think your kid's possessed by the devil. Well, what did the psychiatrist say? What did the medical doctor say? What did the psychologist say? You know, oh, wait, they all say it has a natural explanation? Then it's got a natural explanation. It's a point.
Here's my question.
But even if it doesn't, you can't get to demon. It never gets you to demon.
Have you ever heard of a psychiatrist or a psychologist or anybody in the medical profession ever point to demons or evil spirits or ghosts?
Yes. Let me look up.
Really? In what circumstance?
Besides,
give me a moment. I'm looking up the name of the book.
Did you watch that episode on Soul Phone, by the way? Kevin, did you watch the Soul Phone episode?
I did not see that one.
No, Soul Phone. Contact your dad. You can Skype your dead relatives.
Here's my take on this. And I told you that I would be going into this skeptical.
Which is perfectly fair.
I would love for you to put forth a case that cannot be explained by anything within the natural world. Just one. Where professionals have thrown their hands up and said, well, no clue what that is. Medical professionals can't attribute it to anything psychological. Anything that up until this point is still, it baffles all of the experts. No one has a theory. It's just that completely far out.
Okay, well, the one So let me answer the two questions. One is in terms of somebody in the psychiatric or medical community. There's a book called Glimpses of the Devil, a Psychiatrist's Personal Accounts of Possession, written by M. Scott Peck, MD, who is a psychiatrist who actually wrote about these experiences. And from a psychiatric perspective, M. Scott Peck, P-E-C-K.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
In terms of, again, this is going to be purely anecdotal, but there's the case of Maurice Thériault, who was a French-Canadian who's believed to have been demonically possessed. During video footage of the exorcism, his face physically starts to split open, blood falls out of the cut, and between the cut and his shirt, it turns from blood into water. I'm not aware of a medical explanation of that myself.
Okay, where is the proof of this happening?
that would be the, unfortunately this would be from a couple by the name of Ed and Lorraine Warren. I don't think they're generally releasing it.
No, I know who they are.
Kevin, not Ed and Lorraine Warren, the doll that talks and
the doll. The doll. They have the shop, don't they? Or the one haunted doll.
Yes.
Yeah, the museum. Yeah. Annabelle.
They're proven shysters.
They have a live feed on that, by the way.
No, they really aren't. This is a whole other long argument we can get into.
Yeah, that might be a whole different show. I would be down for that. They do have a live feed, or they did at one time on it. It wasn't on Annabelle. Well, they think it maybe had them on Annabelle. But the one I watched was on something else, and you know, like weird things would move and shit, right? I can't say that to even in here. No,
their seances and stuff to have. Trap doors that slide so someone can move. Like somebody's gone through. And,
yeah, I'm willing to guess that they probably have trickery.
They're seance.
I've heard the story. Yeah, No, they really. That would not be correct. Trust me, I've been down this road before. I worked. Lou was the last student Ed taught before he died.
Okay.
And a lot of these stories.
I'd be okay with that. I mean, maybe we can get them on or something. See, the thing that I have is that historically,
passed away.
Well, who owns the shop now?
His wife Lorraine is still around, and his son-in-law Tony Spira run it currently.
Okay. And they have a warning label, right? They have something along the lines of "Don't make fun of the doll," right? Because deaths have occurred. Yeah. Okay. So here's the thing. All these supernatural things that I've ever looked into historically, right? They've all been fabricated, right? And I can't, you know, obviously say that these people are fabricating stuff. I don't have enough information to say that. What I can say that is that historically, every single time they've had these psychic things, all of them that have ever been investigated, not one has ever been found to be the case. They've always found some form of trickery. Always. Right. I mean, this has been a mediumship has been around for hundreds of years because they know the tricks of the trade, right? That are very convincing to people that don't know the tricks, but they have these tricks. If mediumship worked, if there was something legitimate to them, there would not be the need for so many things that are trickery, right? You at least find some that you just go, you know, I can't find any trickery. They don't seem to have that, right? And every time they've investigated, they find trickery. So what would you think why they would be any different from historical precedent that there's always been trickery in these seances?
But there've also been a number of people. I mean, there's also Harry Price, who's a well-known believer and ghost hunter from the early 1900s, who was actually a good friend of Harry Houdini's and is well-known for having actually debunked some of the mediums in question.
Well, Harry Houdini was a big debunker.
Yeah.
But
Price was not. Price was a believer.
Here's just one example. According to a 1997 interview with the Connecticut Post, Cinder Vela and Perry DeAngelis investigated the Warrens for the New England Skeptical Society. They found the couple to be pleasant people, but their claims of demons and ghosts to be at best as tellers of meaningless ghost stories, fabricated seances, and dangerous frauds. They took the $12.50 tour and looked at all the evidence the Warrens had for spirits and ghosts. They watched the videos and looked at the best evidence the Warrens had. Their conclusion, it's all blarney. They found common errors with flash photography and nothing evil in the artifacts the Warrens had stated they had collected. They have a ton of fish stories without any evidence that got away. They're doing nothing scientific to investigate. They have a predetermined conclusion which they adhere to. Literally and religiously. And then it lists off the different cases that the Warrens investigated and where they were flawed. I can send you that too. Hold on.
You can, although the counter I would point out is skeptics. In reality, despite claims to the contrary, skeptics are also biased.
Well, you want a skeptic to look at it biasly. You know what I'm saying? Like, you want somebody that doesn't believe coming in and looking at the evidence.
The problem is that the bias influences their own interpretation of the evidence. Just as a believer,
but shouldn't it be overwhelming? But shouldn't it be so overwhelming that the critic just can't help but be inspired to believe?
No, I've like, had
again.
I've had critics
if we
tell
could
me
do that. We,
yeah, I've had. Look at I. First of all, I think people use the word skeptic. It just drives me nuts. It's ordinary skepticism, and there's skepticism in philosophy, and they're not the same thing. People just throw out the words. Oh, I just don't believe things on face value. That's not really a skeptic, right? That's just, you need like evidence like anybody else. What rational person believes things without some kind of justification? That's the definition of irrational, right? So just because you do that doesn't make you a skeptic. I'm sorry, that's just human nature. But when you have people tell me, look, God himself could come down in front of me and tell me he's Jehovah, and I'd be like, you're probably not. I'm skeptical of that. There are people out there that no matter what you show them are going to say, no, I don't believe it. So there's not a threshold for certain people that are just, like he said, so much bias that nothing will ever convince them of the case. There are, just people that hold to methodological natural, ontological naturalism to the extreme. And I'm not faulting that. I'm not judging that position. I'm just saying is that no matter what evidence you give them, they're never going to say this is a supernatural causation. It's just not going to happen. Would you agree with that, Kevin?
Yes.
Have you met people like that? Okay, because I have. I know people.
Not for everybody. Not for everybody.
No, not for everybody. I'm not generalizing.
That's a blanket statement.
I'm just saying there are some people out there.
But I don't think you can. Whatever. Like, ultimately, to me, it would seem like they would have at least one piece of evidence with the what looks like 18 cases that they've had that would be somewhat stimulating of a what is going on with this. But they were able to come to conclusions on each point. And my point is, as long as you're able to come to a conclusion that exists within this natural world, everything else is too complicated to get to ghosts. If you have an explanation for why things happen the way that they do within our natural world, I think you stop there. There's no need to go any further than that.
Yeah, his position would be more along the lines of, look, until you have a reason to posit a certain thing, like, for example, if I knew ghosts existed, right, if I had actual knowledge, and I mean in the epistemological sense, I knew they existed, that if I saw something happen, then I can say, look, I know these entities exist. I know the properties that they have of it. And I can now draw a causal link. Right. But until you have that, I just cannot get to the point where I can say, look, this is because of a ghost. Right. We've never seen a ghost do anything.
Look at my skeptic. Look at my Sphinx.
I'm even more open-minded than him. So
I am very open-minded. Like, I believed for a long time that the Sphinx was created by an ancient civilization that was hidden from us. But I also have to, when the time came, I also had to, and we had a show where this, we've actually had six shows on it, and I held my guns until Dr. Bob came. And when Dr. Bob came and put forth his evidence, like, I could not, even though I wanted to, maybe I could not go on any further, because I knew that looking at it rationally and looking at all the pieces of the evidence, I no longer had the ground to stand on, that he had made a case that made more sense. It was simpler. It wasn't as romantic or as whimsical or as, exciting as a civilization that, society forgot about. But looking at the evidence, I had to honestly go, okay, it makes more sense that this is the narrative, and I have to drop that.
Okay, Kai, well, let me ask you this. Let's say we did a seance thing, right? And somehow during the middle of the seance, like, everybody starts levitating in the room, right? Fire starts breaking out. Trumpets start heralding. Demons start appearing in the room. Heads start exploding. You and I are the only one left, right? Everybody else dies in the room. Sorry, people that are going to do this experiment with us. You're fucked in this experiment. So Kai and I survive because we have a show to do, okay? Sorry, okay? Priorities, people.
Yeah.
But if that, say like that happened, right? Again, sure. How do you make the connection that they were actually demons that you're contacting? All you know is that something happened. All you know is the event that you witnessed. All you know is that what has transpired. Now, granted, definitely be like, hey, there is something to this, and I believe in the supernatural, right? I would be like, this is not a naturalistic thing. I'm totally cool with that, right?
That's a good indicator that there's something fucked up evil going on. If people's heads start exploding,
I'm with you, right? I have enough evidence for that. But I still can't say, well, this was a demon that caused it, because I don't know what the hell the properties of a demon is. All I know is that this was not a natural event, thus not natural, thus supernatural. That's as far as I can take it. And I'd never do it again.
Well, let me address that, because you raise a good point, Steve, and there's two points I want to make on that. One is, from my own perspective, it wasn't heads exploding, but I did watch some invisible something walk across that bed in that house on video. I mean, if I can get a hold of the video, I'll let you guys know, and I'd love to show it to you. But
I'd like to see something like that.
Again, that, and I don't have a good. I have as outside of outright trickery, and it was a live feed, so nobody doctored with the footage while I was watching it. Mm-hmm. I don't have an explanation for that. Now, you, Steve, I think you have an absolutely legitimate point of, well, how do we know that it's a demon? And honestly, I don't know for certain that it's a demon. Demon's kind of a handy label that we hang on it. Because I speak to non-Christians, I speak to magicians and pagans and things of that nature. They'll ask me, well, how do you know it's a demon and not this and not that and not the other? And it's like, I don't know. I mean, I also don't especially care.
No, I respect that. At least you're honest about that.
It's something paranormal that is happening in someone's house that is causing a problem. What are we going to do about it?
I think you had it right there a second ago, Kevin. Mm-hmm. If you just stop it, I don't know. I think that's okay. You don't have to have the answer. It only becomes problematic, or distracting, or you're going to conjecture when you try to take that I don't know and know without being able to do that, because some things you just might not know.
Well, let's be clear. I don't claim. I claim to believe. I don't claim to know.
Yeah, I want to ask you that. So you don't claim knowledge on these things, right? Because you couldn't. I don't see how you could get to a knowledge position. Beliefs, obviously, yes. I do believe very strongly. You believe this. And that's why I'm not coming down on you in any way, like I would somebody who I think is disingenuous. Because the stuff that, like, for example, when we had Soulful on, Kyle was losing his mind, right? Kyle was just like, these people are just disingenuous as fuck. And the guy that came on did not have answers to anything, right? He could tell that he was squirming, because I was asking some pretty difficult questions. And unlike you, who believes, and you're willing to go, you know what, there might be some good points here, I'll take this on board. That, to me, is a reasonable person. The guy, he didn't seem reasonable, because he didn't have any questions to anything or answers to any of my questions. He was definitely not wanting to be there, and it just reeked of something on the duplicitous meter, right? Yeah, and because Kyle was all along going, these people are just scam artists. So I do have a difference on how I approach these conversations for somebody like yourself. Well, I honestly think you do believe this, and I don't think people should dog on you for it. Because I used to believe the same things you did. I was you in high school, and I didn't want people to think less of me. So
we've been going for 2 hours. We've got to get to super chats.
I love this topic. Let's go for another two more, man. It's good to go.
I do have work at 7 o'clock in the morning, unfortunately.
Yeah,
this is not about you. This is about us.
By the way,
you're the one that's going to head.
Steve and I will be on Kevin's show, Paranormal Encyclopedia, on Thursday. That will be from 6:30 to 7:30. So make sure Eastern that you check us out. Yeah, Eastern.
Can you make sure you check this seance thing? Kevin's head explodes. Yeah, there's a little piece of mandible left.
I told you so.
There you go.
That'd be an interesting way to go. I got to give you that one, Steve.
Exactly. You're right. I mean, like, God damn it, Kevin's right.
If my head has to explode, I want my mandible to be around just long enough to go, told you so.
Exactly. That's the way I want to go, right? Get that shit on camera.
If I do a seance, then it's going to be like in Beetlejuice. With that song that plays, and we'll do the Congo line and that sort of thing.
Oh, I love that movie.
That was a good one.
I'm just thinking, I have a friend I should introduce. introduce you guys to that you might find interesting to have on.
Ooh, the last time somebody said I have a friend to introduce you to, we dated for a couple of years.
Well, unless, maybe right. Kyle, because he's a guy, although he's in a relationship with a woman.
See, always about Kyle. Yeah, whatever.
It's never stopped me before. It's never stopped. No, I'm taking myself. But no,
he has a channel. His name. Yeah. Well, good for you. I wish you happiness with that.
Well, it depends on what day it is, honestly. Some days I'm just kidding. Granted. Love you. All right. Please don't say
I'm
juice.
Single, though. Hello. Oh, sorry.
Steve, I hope you find somebody.
Yeah, well, I keep looking.
Yes, I'm taken. Okay. I've been taken for about three years now. I just don't. I keep. I'm slowly getting him around. Hopefully here in the next month, I will have him pop in on a stream. But for right now,
I listen to your flat earth stuff. You think he really wants to come around? You're like, dude, that just no.
I don't tell him everything that goes on this show. Some days I'm just like, nah, you don't want to. Don't worry about that one.
No, he knows how to keep a relationship going. There you go. Something's about
it. Gotta keep it spicy.
Chris Foster says in a Jesse Lee Peterson voice, that's amazing. By the way, Steve, I need you to watch Jesse Lee Peterson because your statements at the beginning.
Yeah, no,
I
looked him up on Wikipedia, and even though I now know some of his positions I didn't know before, he seems to be very racist for some reason. As a black person, but he seems to have a lot of weird beliefs. I just watched a few interviews where he seemed to interview pretty well, but his ideological positions, yeah, I'm not comfortable with, just from what I've read off Wikipedia. But I watched some of the more egregious ones, if you wish. Yes,
they're all egregious. Anytime he is in a camera frame, it's egregious. Athena, goddess of wisdom and warfare, says.
Real quick, before we get to Athena, I know Athena wants it read, but. Do you is this guy really a racist? I mean, he's a black racist, because that seems weird.
Yes, he has had black people on his show that he interviews, asking them why they are essentially good for nothing, why they expect a handout, why they can't support Trump. The Great White Hope is what he calls Trump. If that tells you anything,
he's Kanye West.
That's weird.
He's like Kanye West's father. He's just.
I take it back. I rescind what I said earlier. I rescind what I said earlier. It's just like I said, I only judged him by the one few things that I saw him interview. So,
yeah.
There's also forget the name of the group. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say there. I forget the name of the tribe, but there's the one tribe in Africa that paints their skin white and is like hyper racist against other black people. People are strange. I think we can all agree on that.
Yes, people are. More than strange. More than strange. In fact, that's the majority cast of this show, especially on Saturday nights. Athena, goddess of wisdom and warfare, says, why couldn't other experiences also be psychological? I know it doesn't help to tell them it's a...
From, I think it was
a,
from... He was meant to write from, I think.
Oh, it's from their heads, but maybe that may be the case. That's a question to you, Kevin.
That other experiences are. I'm trying to
Why
follow
couldn't
the
other experiences also be psychological?
What other experiences? What is what I'm wondering? I mean, what do they mean by that?
Like,
I'm not trying to avoid the question. I'm just not sure.
I think he's getting at why couldn't the experiences that you guys deem as paranormal be a psychological experience? And he says, I know it doesn't help to tell them that it's all from their head, but that may be the case. So it may be the instance that they're just creating these situations in their head.
It may be, and which is also why, like I said, I do work. I do normally work with psychologists and therapists and things of that nature, because the ideal is we want to try and eliminate as much of those as we possibly can. And that goes beyond just checking their medicine cabinet to see if they lied to us about what medications they're on. There's always that possibility that it's in their head, or for that matter, there's a fair number of people that have quite natural experiences that they think are paranormal. I had, this didn't happen to me, but it's one of my favorite stories. I had a friend of mine who was an investigator in Texas who was asked to investigate a house where somebody had been murdered in the house, and then after that person was murdered, nobody could stay in the house. People lasted a couple of days and then ran out screaming. The owners were desperate to rent it to somebody. And she goes in and she looks into it and she finds out there's a family of raccoons living underneath the house. And
were they demonic raccoons?
Nope, just regular raccoons.
Could have been possessed raccoons. Oh,
is there a group?
It could have been. But
could have been.
it could have been there? A group, but I don't know. But on the other hand,
It was a raccoon cult. That's what it was.
There you go. It's a raccoon cult. And maybe they're manipulating the guy who committed the murder in the house before. The funniest part of that story, aside from the demonic raccoons, was because for very logical reasons, it's never a good idea to go into a empty house by yourself. So the woman in question brought a friend of hers who was an ex-Navy SEAL. So they walk in the front door. They hear weird noises. Her response is, okay, let's try and find a source to the noise. His response was to turn around and run out of the house screaming at the top of his lungs like a little girl.
That's mean.
And yeah, no shame. And she ultimately found the raccoons.
You may scream, but you live to scream another day.
Yeah.
That's how that works. All right. Oflamio, what is a bigger threat, demons or scammers? And I think we've already said that we don't believe that Kevin is scamming because he actually, he genuinely believes this. And he says that he doesn't take any money from anyone. So, Lloydie says,
in a broader sense, I'd say scammers are more of a problem because there's a lot more people are having problems with scammers than demons, I think.
Well one exists and one doesn't. That would be my answer. So,
yeah.
Obviously, the scammers.
Before we went on air, we were talking about like Cephalodollar and these prosperity gospel, Joel Osteen and these people that have $40 million yeah. plus. They're scammers in the name of theology. I think that's the worst of what than anything that you could have done, because I think you have an honest inquiry. I may not necessarily think the methodology is sound, but you have an honest inquiry. Those people are just fucking scammers, straight up. Benny Hinn, Exorcist, we're going to be having stories on this. We're going to be going further into exorcisms, something like that. Some of these people are so dishonest and so duplicitous.
Bob Larson.
Larson.
Don't piss him off. We're going to have him on. So.
Oh, really?
Bob's coming to non-sequitur.
Yeah. So, Bob, if you're listening.
Shit.
Those people to me are just disgusting. Bob Larson types are just vile fuck. And,
how about Oral Roberts, the guy who said that if people didn't give him a couple $1 million, God would strike him dead?
God could have taken him. Let him have him.
Yeah, he horrible human man.
God's going to take me home if I don't raise $7 million.
All right, we got to get through these guys.
Yeah, we're right.
Lloyd East.
Yeah.
Lloyd says, Mwahahahaha. Real quick, Flat Earth Victoria, Canada. You come in this chat and you run your bitch ass mouth every single time, but I give you a link to come in here and see if you can back up your claims, and you trot off like the little bitch you are. So continue to talk all the shit that you want. Everyone here is laughing at you because you are so bitch made. It's incredible. So shut the fuck up. All right. Vibrantly Brantley says, please tell one story of someone trying to trick you with stage magic.
I've never had it happen on a case. Like I said, the majority of people I run into that I think don't have something in their house are either mentally ill or they're having raccoons and thinking it's demons. Now, the preacher that I worked with had an experience where he went into a house, they're saying that it was demonic, and they're watching this spoon just slide back and forth across the table. And Father Bros, the priest in question, actually happened to be a stage magician himself. And he looks, and he just does the obvious thing, and looks under the table, and the guy's got a magnet, and he's just dragging it back and forth.
Okay. Trickery, yeah.
Yeah.
Lawrence Carrington says,
I've had psychics. I'm sorry. No, I was going to say, I have had psychics on my show before that I think are full of shit.
I want to find one that thinks that they're not full of shit. I want to get one of them on. All right, let's get through these. Go ahead,
Lawrence. Carrington says, is there any reporting done by anyone that shows the results during an investigation between an emotional slash psychological event versus a demonic slash ghost slash poltergeist event that can be viewed?
I believe Peck that I mentioned earlier does get into that. There's another good book on the subject, The Terror That Comes in the Night, which is about the subset of what we call of the sleep paralysis phenomenon that's known as a hag attack. He doesn't necessarily draw conclusions that it is paranormal. Yes.
The old hag. I've seen her. I have seen her once. Should you not, during a sleep paralysis. Yes.
Yeah, it's a very common experience in this guy. So here we go. I got the name of the book.
And she was in a great nightgown too. I mean, I remember the actual nightgown that she was wearing.
Mm-hmm. So the book's called The Terror That Comes in the Night, An Experience-Centered Study of Supernatural Assault Traditions by David J. Hufford. And his argument, and what I like about it, and I think it fits a lot with what Steve's been saying, is he's not saying this is demonic. He's not saying this isn't demonic. He's saying this is a subcategory of experience that we need to look into more.
Well, it's a shared hallucinatory experience, not shared as in like locality, but people have experienced this same archetype.
All over the world for thousands
all over the world.
Years.
The old hag is a very real phenomenon. But here's the thing. I didn't experience the old hag until after I was aware of it. So the narrative would then be like, okay, it's because it kind of printed, but it was a very vivid hallucination. I mean, I've had very, very, dude, you're looking at it. And she was there. She was floating and in this old lady. Not malicious, really. I didn't get any terrified feelings. But she was wearing this gray gown. And there's another time where I saw this entity. It looks like a crypt keeper of some kind floating there. You know, it was like draped in this black, what do they call it? Death shawl. What you wear when you die? What do they call them?
Shroud.
They put over you. Whatever. Shroud. Yeah.
Shroud.
And the glazing eyes. You can see the hands and everything. And it just was looking at me. And I was like, what the fuck is this thing? You know, I was checking out because I'm inquisitive, right? And I've had so many sleep paralysis. It wasn't scary, but I was like, okay, this is fucked. So these things do happen.
Dana McWhite wants me, you, and Steve to do a pull up on a pull up bar. So
the one behind me.
I'm
42, I was a kid, I couldn't do a pull up bar. I can tell you right now, there's no way in heck I can do a pull-up. I've never been able to do a pull-up in my life.
I can do just probably two. When I went to...
I used to be really good at flex arm.
When I was in prison, I could rep those things out like you wouldn't believe. I could probably do 10 now. I used to
get up to
40, though.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you right now, if you're going in the military... You learn how to rep those things out. You learn how to do hundreds of push-ups. You learn how to do exercise. I was in the best shape of my life after boot camp. No question.
And finally, Cam Shahid says, I can't do Kevin anymore. At Steve, I respect your position, but I don't necessarily agree. I'm going to go play some PS4. Cheers.
PS4 is good.
I hope you're playing... If you're playing something good, let me just double check and make sure that that's all of them.
Somebody had asked me if I have lucid dreams nowadays.
All right.
No, not so much. My dreams are more vivid, although occasionally, very, very rarely. But as I've read that as you get older, the ability to have lucid dreams diminishes. And I remember my first lucid dream, I was about 2. So it goes back throughout. My dad has suffered from him as well. He was well familiar with the sleep paralysis and things.
Oh, no, sleep paralysis, I want to say, happens to about 30% of the population at least once in their life. I've experienced it myself. I would say if you're having it on a regular basis, you might want to get it looked at because it can be indicative of more serious medical problems.
I'm almost 50. I've had it since I was two.
Just call it priest. Just call it priest.
Call Bob Larson. Hey, Bob.
Kevin, let everybody know where people can follow you and see your work and shill real quick. Tell people where they can go to get more Kevin.
Okay, so if you've enjoyed this or if you just find me really funny, you can look up Paranormal Encyclopedia here on YouTube or The Paranormal Encyclopedia on Facebook. And you can hear us. We're live every 6:30 to 7:30 every Thursday. There's over 100 past videos up. And if you're not into the paranormal thing, we do have horror authors on. We just a month or so, two ago had Dacre Stoker, the great grandnephew of Bram Stoker, on there. He was an incredibly nice guy. We've had one co-host is a hypnotist. We've had a bunch of writers, one of the neater guys we've had on, and we're going to be having on again soon, is a guy by the name of John French, who writes mystery fiction and paranormal cop fiction, and he's actually a crime scene supervisor for the city of Baltimore.
Oh, cool. When is that?
Yeah, very nice guy. I don't know when we're going to have him on again. We're going to have him and another friend of mine, Patrick Thomas, are writing partners, and we're going to have them on together. But the information will be up on my Facebook and my YouTube once we have a date.
I have a rumor that I'm going to be turned into a vampire on Thursday, or hypnotized into a vampire on Thursday.
I'll see what Baron can do. But you guys, I said it before and I'll say it again formally for everybody here. You guys are absolutely welcome to come on my show. I'm looking forward to having you.
We'll be there.
We'll be there.
Yeah, I like personal.
I've always wanted to be a vampire ever since I saw Twilight.
Why? Do you want to like not see yourself in a mirror? Come on, dude. That'd be like painful for you not to even
look
at
yourself.
No, that's
the wrong kind. That's the wrong. He wants.
Oh, we're talking about. Oh, we're talking about like the Twilight. Okay, the sparkle diamond. Twilight.
Okay, Twilight is not vampires. I'm sorry.
You're monster. Yeah. I feel like your monster, you're monstering me right now. It's 2019. I don't need you or anyone else to tell me what kind of vampire that I will be.
Sparkle.
I don't care. Okay. And for William, you say I'm dead to you. That's right. I'm a vampire. So that is exactly right. I am dead to you.
But no, you're not dead. You're undead. You're undead to him.
One in the same, I think, right? That works out to be the same. Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. Although, I would be completely fine with Eric from True Blood, too. I'll take that one as well. So
there's a very serious question
your co-host wants to do, I'm fine with.
Yeah. I'll talk to him and see what we can do. Although I have to ask, Kyle, if you actually become a vampire, will you be able to keep your hair that awesome?
Actually, it'll be awesomer because it won't, like... It won't like grow or anything. It can just stay like I can just snap my fingers, right? And you know, have you ever seen a hideous vampire? I haven't, except Nosferatu. You know, there's
I was
always
about
one
to
off,
say.
Other than that,
yeah, the original
point to me, a ugly vampire.
Steve's absolutely right.
We've had Edward from Twilight. We have Eric from True Blood. We have Bill from True Blood. We got Brad Pitt from Interview with a Vampire. Wesley Snipes. In Blade.
Yep. Don't forget the original Bela Lugosi.
Bela Lugosi, man, he was okay. He was like a four. I guess.
Women loved him. He got love letters to the day he died from doing that part.
That's because they had to, or he would literally bite their necks until they died. So they had to love him.
I'm not into guys, so I can't say how.
Aaliyah from Lestat. Yeah, she was a beautiful vampire. Unfortunately, that was the last movie she ever did, but yeah.
That's unfortunate.
You're more like an uncle that talks to me about cool stuff and secretly tells my parents are full of shit. Jim, I'm more like an uncle.
Wow.
Well,
any hope for your
we
guys?
Need to have a conversation then. We need to have a conversation then.
I think Jim is not just friend zoning you, he's family zoning you.
Yeah, that's harsh, man.
Yeah.
We've already
been family zoned.
I don't know if we can go back.
Yeah.
Okay. That's gonna do it for us here at the show. I'm gonna go bite someone's neck. Steve's gonna go play with a Ouija board. And then Kevin's going to call a priest to make us all go back to normal. And when we come back, we will be joined by two incels. Actually,